Hello and welcome to another episode of Consider This. Today we are in the studio and we will be recording episode number 181 on the question of how should we use digital church platforms in the year of our Lord 2024. My name is Ryan Vincent. I have with me today Drew Henderson and Jim Johnson, and we will talk about everything from AI to cassette tapes in the 80s. I hope you enjoy. Well, it has come to our attention lately that with the incredible amount of new people at Sunnybrook that God has been blessing us with over the last year or so, that we need to do a better job of introducing ourselves. So particularly who our names, we sometimes just go by first name and then we rarely mention what we do. But today I have with me Jim Johnson. What does he do? He does the lead pastoring
or ministering,
the lead ministering, and from the point there, and then he is one of 12 elders. One of 12 equal elders. And then I also have with me Drew Henderson, who runs everything from birth until you get out of high school. He oversees all of our student ministries and does so very well. And I'm Ryan Vincent. I always joke that my title's made up. It is Ryan Vincent, utility infielder, does whatever a gap needs to be filled. So today we're going to be talking about doing church digitally in 2024. This is a conversation we've actually had before, and we had an interesting one in the middle of the pandemic that we will be reposting soon, and we can compare notes between then and now. But I'm going to start off with a question I didn't tell you guys I was going to ask. You've both been in ministry for quite some time. Jim, you even grew up in church. Drew, you came to faith later as a teenager, but you guys have done ministry as a vocation for quite a while. So you've always had somewhere you needed to be on Sundays, right? So you have your worship service that you will be a part of. But you're both consumers of other church ministries, the ministries of other ministers, whether that's through podcasts or videos. Who are some of the pastors that you have most enjoyed taking in their content digitally over the years? Jim, I even know we've been at the Ozark Library checking out cassette tapes to rip sermons from them. So who are some of those people that have been influential to you as pastors, but you weren't actually part of their congregations?
That's a good question. Jim, do you have someone right
off the top of it? I would say that in terms of like when I was wanting to learn about how to preach and thinking about preaching styles and stuff, it was definitely Fred Craddock and William Willimon. So a DOC pastor and a United Methodist minister.
Department of Corrections?
Loved there. Or Disciples of Christ.
Disciples of Christ.
So those guys were really big. So I listened to them a lot. And again, on cassette tapes back in the 90s in a series called Preaching Today. And then I would say in the next kind of time in my life or era in my life, I really did enjoy actually the bare knuckles preaching of Mark Driscoll and Matt Chandler. Yeah. And so those guys became pretty influential. And I would say they kind of really opened up the door for me to just teach the text more. Instead of if Willimon and Craddock really kind of encouraged me to be at some level creative or whatever, the other guys really, just teach the text. Like that's really what church is all about. And I really appreciated that. And then I'll just add one other one that I just really, there's been, like I've loved Alistair Begg and I'd spent a lot of time listening to Andy Stanley and some other guys. But I would say the next major influence was probably Tim Keller.
Yeah,
where I just found myself listening to his sermons over and over and over again and was somewhat mesmerized by all of that. So,
That's a great question. I don't know if I can pick out two or three. It seems like I've just listened to a variety over the years. Just what you've said there, Jim, a lot of those same names stick out to me. I think Mark Driscoll back in the vintage 2007-08 years, I don't think I had ever really heard anyone preach like that before. I can remember most sermons that I listened to. And as I read the Bible now, like, I remember he preached. I mean, he had a gift of connecting the text in a way that I had never heard before.
I think I like my phrase bare knuckles preaching.
Yeah.
I just came up with that.
Right. I think he would appreciate it.
I think he would. I should call him.
Now he's just wearing a camo American flag hat, yes. which is kind of strange.
Getting himself and it really in some does. Over the years, you're like,
you know what? Should I have been all that impressed by what he was doing? Or was that just kind of, you know, what it was at that time, right? Yeah. And yet, I can still even appreciate, wow, that for that season, I really learned some things, right? That, that really connected to me in a, at a time in my life, you know, at my age, kids, you know, younger kids that, that connected. I get a lot of Stanley sermons that I remember most of what he preached. A lot of sermons, most of them I don't remember. I can remember most of what he said in some of those main keynotes that we went to back in the day at Catalyst and things like that. Other than that, I don't listen to like a lot of sermons right now. I listen to just a lot more Al Mohler. Listen to some Al Mohler. He's interesting. Very interesting.
But not his sermons, his podcast, right?
Like
cultural commentary. More of his reflections.
Yeah, his reflections. It's amazing that he does that just totally, that is not prepared. I've heard him talk about it. He just talks, which is amazing to me. So
It is interesting that it's moved away from, we used to consume more sermons, but now it's like biblically informed commentary on society podcasts. Like that's the kind of stuff that I listen to a lot now. But for me, it was early Matt Chandler. A lot of that stuff, we would listen to it weekly. Rachel and I would on like Sunday afternoons. And I think most of that stuff's been taken down now. It was a lot of his pre-2009 stuff that I was really drawn to. And it was, you know, bare knuckle, I guess you could say. Tim Keller, right now he's probably reading Mere Christianity to Jesus in Heaven. But another one that for me was really in like transformative early on was when seminaries began to make class lectures available as podcasts and downloads. Those were huge for me. Coming to faith a little later in life really accelerated some things for me. Well, we're talking about this because here at Sunnybrook, we're having a lot of conversations from the ministry side of things about the digital age that we are truly like in the thick of. And we're having conversations of anywhere from to what extent is AI a good thing for ministry and where can it be dangerous to even more humdrum conversations about givens. Like, should we work on making some minor improvements on our website or how should we use social media posts and to what extent? But really what we want to talk about here in this recording is an expanded version of a conversation we started to have as a worship arts team, which is what are we trying to achieve when we record our worship services? And so the first question I want to ask you guys is what, like, again, we're listening to sermons, so we're listening to even in some sense more often than not a section of a worship service, not the whole thing. But what about a worship service can and cannot be replicated by an online version of it? Say someone logs in, watches your sermon and the worship from this Sunday, Jim. What are they getting and what are they missing out on?
Well, it's a little bit of like what I'm actually doing intentionally is I'm trying to inform myself. I'm trying to learn about either how to preach a text or the specific content of a text. And so I'm using it to, and for lots of things simultaneously. So I'm not just doing it, say, for quote unquote, my craft of preaching, right? So the that one element of my job, I'm actually doing it to be encouraged and blessed by a particular text. And so I'm literally considering it to be like an audio article or an audio version. And most of them are actually more audio than video. And I will listen, and I'm basically learning everything from the nuanced ways to communicate ideas. But since the ideas that they're being communicated are Christian, I'm also being edified and encouraged to think better and deeper about the things of God. So I think that's what I'm doing, and so therefore there can be a lot of things that are missed in terms of what I'm doing in my car. Distracted, not really paying attention. I don't really have to be very engaged. It's kind of on my time and at my leisure. So I think there's a lot of stuff that gets just kind of removed. And so it literally becomes like, I like to think of it as an article that I've kind of photocopied and it's sitting on the edge of my desk and I'll get to it when I can. And I find a value and a purpose of it. But it's still very different than like a what I would argue to be a full worship experience in which, in that context, also the Word of God is broken open.
Yeah.
So they're very, very different experiences.
Okay.
So was the question, why are we putting our service online?
Well, what can be gained by it, what can we possibly be missing? Because sure. I think we're not even, yeah. I guess in theory we're asking the question, should we? But we're probably going to continue, I would assume. But we want to refine why and then work towards fulfilling that why.
Yeah, at least from my observation, it looks like we're putting this service online so it can be there for those that have missed church for whatever reason or another.
Yeah.
And so it seems like we've done this, way back, whether we started with cassette tapes or we went to CDs. Sometimes it was like, oh, I really liked that sermon. I want to keep that. So I want to have it with me. I want to listen to it again. So it seems like that was more the mentality 25 years ago.
Sure. Yep.
And it could have been because I missed the service too, for whatever reason, or it could have been because the homebound weren't there and I'm going to take this sermon to, didn't have the worship typically back then, but I'm going to take this to the person that missed and was not able to be there. It seems like because our culture and society seems like it has become more and more mobile. So I think at times it has become less committed to the church. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what the stats would tell you, that people are less committed for whatever reason or another to coming to the embodied presence of the worship service. That is true. And then I think on the very side, I think a lot of just my brother-in-law, he travels a lot for his job. A lot of that involves Sundays. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like our culture and society, you can't deny the fact that it's just more mobile. People are going more places, different times in and out. And it seems like it's moved from, hey, here's the CD of the sermon, to I wasn't here, I would want to watch the service.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like in the case of my family, a few weeks ago, we were traveling and it wasn't even,
you know, traveling on a Sunday.
We were.
Okay.
Wow. And
confessions of a pastor.
That's right.
That's our next podcast.
Okay.
And we didn't even we weren't even assuming we would get an archive version. We had we were streaming it live in the car.
Yeah.
Now, I think one of the differences that we might want to draw some sort of line between is, yes, people are more mobile. The world is more connected in terms of travel, and so people are just on the road a lot. And they have the option to get this, but they had that option 10, 20 years ago.
Sure.
I think one of the concerns that maybe we want to bring to the table is, but this is not a direct substitute for that.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if you came in on a Thursday and if we had made the CDs already of Jim's sermon, you asked, can I have one? You weren't going to go home on Thursday night, put it into your CD player, your 5.1 surround system, and
still have one, by the way, upstairs.
I know you do. Mm-hmm. But you weren't going to go put that in and feel like your family was doing church on Thursday night. And I think that might be a difference that a lot of people are starting to experience, is they feel like it is a substitute.
Like, so I never once said, hey, there's this great Fred Craddock sermon, and so we're not going to go to Christ Church of Orinoco this Sunday, which was where we were members. And then we'll just, sing a couple of songs together. We'll get some bread and some grape juice. And then when it comes to the sermon time, I'll just hit play and we'll consider this to be church for today. I mean, we never thought of doing that at all. And so I've never considered it to be a replacement. It literally is another message I would like to be encouraged by this week. Because not only did I appreciate what I heard on Sunday or even gathering together, there's so many things that you cannot produce digitally. So it just doesn't work. It's a little bit like, we've got kids traveling all over the place, living all over the place. And I absolutely love those Saturdays in which I get to do a little bit of FaceTime with my grandkids. But I've never once thought, ugh, we don't need to go to Poland or we don't need to go to whatever. I mean, it literally is the difference. And so, it's not a bad thing to do because there's no other better option in front of me.
Yeah.
But I promise you, if we lived in town and we decided to do Christmas on Zoom, you would just go, that's a little bit broken. Like, what's wrong with your family?
We could go to the candlelight service on Zoom.
Yeah. Like, why would you do that? Like, that doesn't even make sense to me. Like, your grandkids are across town and you decided to stay at home and just kind of zoom in a family experience. Like, that's not what a real family experience is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of understanding the limits and the placement of these things. It's not like they're inherently wrong. It's when we begin to use them as a replacement that concerns me.
Yeah. We're actually, this summer on Consider This, we're going to repost a series of older episodes that you may or may not have listened to already, but that speak to subjects that are continuing to be relevant, and we think that what was said on those episodes will be worth listening to again or for the first time. And one of the ones that we're going to post pretty soon is episode 118, and this episode was recorded via Zoom 6 weeks into the pandemic in 2020. And we had on two professors from Mozart Christian College, Chad Ragsdale and Michael DeFazio, to discuss what is online church. Because at that point, we were all doing online church. It wasn't just for the traveling. There was no travel. It was for everyone.
And by necessity.
We were creating some sort of replica, though it wasn't 100%. But we were creating something of a replica for Drew and Kim and the kids to experience in their living rooms.
Yep.
And that's going to be an interesting episode for you to go and listen to. And the questions we were asking 4 years ago inform the questions we're asking now, although we don't have the same limitations where we can't gather in the same space. And one of the things that I thought, I listened to it yesterday, it was helpful for me to remember their comments about, it's hard to practice holiness and forbearance when you don't ever go around other people.
Yeah.
It's hard to, if serving other believers is a big part of gathered worship, it's hard to do that in your living room. I guess you can serve your family, communion, but there is something about physical proximity that cannot be replicated when you're just driving in your van in Missouri, as my family and I were last week. And so, to that end, what is it? How would you guys describe, and this is like a 30,000 foot question, but we could maybe find some wells to dig. How would you describe our general philosophy of using digital ministry to really achieve what we believe is the mission of the church? So we're not just saying, oh, fine, we'll do it because we have to. We believe that there are good reasons to use it, but maybe limitations. So how would you begin to articulate some of our philosophy on that, Drew?
Well, I think is that after our meeting that we had last week, I just started thinking about that more. What have we done as not just a church, but what has us as human beings, what have we done throughout all human existence? Mm-hmm. Like, we at some point have created technology and we've learned to sometimes begrudgingly, sometimes without asking harder questions as what the implications of implementing this technology would be. But the phrase that I keep thinking of is, we work with it.
Yeah.
That's just what we do.
Sure.
And as I think about it, I'm like, I can't think of how we've not just worked with technology.
Yep.
It's funny. We're talking about the, hey guys, we know AI is out there. We need to have a meeting, and we need to talk about, and that we need to do that.
Yeah,
we but will use AI to record that meeting.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny. Like, hey guys, we need to slow this down. I don't know about Google, but and I remember having those thoughts. The early days in college, the internet, and thinking, wow, you're researching sermons online. You're not looking in books. This seems really strange. So I think that we have to ask the harder questions as to what technology means and the implications of the technology, but we've always worked with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the 80s, we worked with technology through cassette tapes and sermons. Yeah. In the 90s, we worked with CDs and sermons. Somewhere here in the last 10 years, we've now worked online by streaming audio sermons. Yeah. Because it just didn't make sense to go buy another CD recorder. That's actually upstairs collecting dust right now. And then it went to video because of the pandemic, and we've worked with technology. And we need to ask the tough questions. We have sound microphones.
Yeah.
And before we had churches of 40 people, and you had one pastor, and because you didn't have a microphone, and you could reach the people and talk to the people with your own voice, and by default you knew them, and then we got microphones. And guess what? Billy Graham got to have awesome crusades and preach the gospel to millions of people in ways that had never been preached before. And behind that was implications that maybe we didn't think through or think about, which we have to think through the implications of technology and what we're doing. But I think somehow to say, you know, we really need to draw the line because, and listen, we need to have those conversations. It's almost like this idea of we can put a stop to it. And it's, I don't know that that's ever really been an option. We need to think through it. We need to take the good from that and then move forward.
Yeah. Going back to, there's so many conversations we have. You know, for those of you that are in business, you know the statement, the meeting after the meeting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have a worship arts meeting, and then there was, I think, a little over 320 other meetings we had after that one meeting, talking about our online presence and our online services and what are we trying to do and what are we trying to... I think the part that I'm going to keep saying, I don't disagree with you, Drew. I mean, we're on the same page. We literally, we're in even the same ballpark when it comes to this. And I'm grateful for even divergent opinions on these matters. I think overall, though, I want to make sure that we're going into this with our eyes open. So at the same time, we're hearing, and we always have in some sense, but we are now hearing at a much quicker rate, that the way that we just embraced Facebook and gave it to everybody at really, really young ages, because, well, you know what? It's just, it's what we always do. It's what humans always do. We have to deal with technology. And so in the end, whether it's a magazine or whatever, blah, 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 that's what we said. And so we just gave everybody Facebook and then Instagram, and it just kept going and going and going. And now people are going, hey, by the way, guess what we found out? It was not a good idea to do that. And so as we're getting reports about what these things are also doing at the same time, that's why I think it's good that we say, okay, so then in what ways are we doing to contribute this? Because one thing I really appreciate about our family ministry, Drew, is you guys have done an amazing job, not only using technology, but simultaneously helping parents understand just how that works without it being, you know, do you remember back in the 80s where there was like these wars against television? Like we shouldn't maybe, you know, there were certain people that were.
Just say no. Yeah. Just say no.
John Piper's still there.
Exactly.
Thank you, Nancy Reagan.
But I remember this kind of anti, you know, should we have televisions? And again, nobody followed it. But I mean, it's not a new idea. But I just remember people going, yeah, we got to be careful. Garbage in, garbage out. We've got to really be careful with the music and all of that stuff. And it's just become, as technology becomes more effective and more helpful, all of these things are great. I think that what we are trying to actually do is say, hey, since we're finding out, wow, that really messed us up more than we realized, how do we now then proactively think through what that looks like? And I would argue probably our family ministry team does the best job. Yeah. And because they're dealing with kids, right? Which is kind of the primary people that we're trying to help. We're trying to say, yeah, there are, the phrase that I have used in the meeting after the meeting is, how do we put governors, like self-imposed governors on the things that we do, which is what you do.
Well, I'm speaking of governors, do you know that Ron DeSantis outlawed social media in Florida for those under 14?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's going to go.
Sure. And
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'll tell you another thing.
How's that going to work?
But another thing is that like it's in every state now is that you can't drink until you're 21.
Yeah.
And you can't smoke until you're 18.
Kansas held out on that one for a long time.
So, you know, so it's not, and you can't drive a car until something. So it's correct. Not, this isn't like a new concept.
Yes.
Wow, we're restricting certain, you know, behaviors and certain, you know, access to certain ages. Yeah, that's kind of what we actually do. And so that's the part that I would say, what we're trying to recognize is that you're right. There's no way we're not going to use technology. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to use it. But we're also not going to be, ignorant about it either. And so how do we help our people, literally, not because we're trying to restrict them per se, but we're not going to assist them in this way.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of been our philosophy in terms of online. We don't want to, I would say in a sentence, it would be, we don't want to assist anyone to use this as a means of not connecting to a local body. Like that's primarily it. We know we can't stop people from doing that.
Yes.
Right? But we can also just build into the system the kind of governors that are necessary that say, yeah, we're not going to make it easy for you. We're not trying to develop an online community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That this is why we use it. This is how we use it.
Yeah.
And then in the end, these are the governing principles that help us do that.
An interesting thing that we did years ago is I remember we were listening to a
podcast, of course, a British theologian named Alistair Roberts. And he made this comment, and we talked about it for hours. But he said, if you get the research says that no pastor really has the ability to care for the souls of more than about 150 people max. And so he said, therefore, if you preach in a church that requires amplification of your voice, you're probably outkicking your coverage. You can't, you are, your church is bigger than you can manage. And we talked about it, and then we said, but what if you have a sound system and 11 pastors?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, what if you take his concern about the ratio of people that you can actually care for and lead, and you do both? You recognize the cost,
sure,
and then you answer the cost with, yep, I guess, a governor or a, yep, guardrail on the other, yep, side. With, yep, we have what we have now. Do you guys envision us making any substantive changes to our approach to technology going forward? I mean, again, artificial intelligence is the big 800-pound gorilla that everyone's trying to deal with now. So, you know, we've even played with it in terms of, again, recording meetings, giving intelligently crafted summaries of meetings, and wow, that saved somebody a lot of work on a keyboard, right? So something as benign as that, but then you have all the way over here to the question of doing research on theology for you in a matter of seconds. We're talking about those things, but are there any other areas at this church where you guys envision, you know, it might look different 10 years from now around here?
I mean, I would just tell you what, if you could ask Drew, hey, what do you think we need to move toward, or, you know, what would be helpful? I mean, I don't think that, on one hand, saying we really believe in the abiding presence of the church, and that if you're not in this room, that you are clearly missing something, which I, yeah, believe.
We're all on the same, yeah, page about that.
Yeah, yep. And I would say that to create something where you are trying to duplicate this, and it's going to be just like you're here in your living room. We're going to have an online host, and we're going to greet our online audience. And no problem with churches really that do that. I don't think that that's really us. I'm not sure that we're really going to move there. Mm-hmm. I think that clearly has some good implications, where maybe you're reaching new people, maybe you're making this a very, very engaging experience for those that can't be here for real relevant reasons. You're sick, you cannot be here. You're just very physically limited to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, right now we're just doing a video feed of the service. You know, I think that we could possibly move to a version of that involved a more than one camera, brought it in a little bit closer. I don't think by doing that, I think we need to think through the implications of what this means.
Sure.
I think that to do that, and then also to say, and hey, because it's really tempting people, I think that's a good question. I'm not sure if you are a good, strong church that loves Jesus, that is really like we are the embodied presence of the church here on earth, that people want to be here, that this is the engaging moment, mm-hmm, that we're somehow going to sacrifice our commitment, yeah, as to what that means. You, yeah, could. I don't think that means, wow, we're abandoning our view of the church and ecclesiology and all, yep, of these things. I don't necessarily make that connection.
Yeah. Because in most other areas, so, we pursue excellence, right? And you're, yeah, saying there might be a little more excellence to be found there.
I think,
yeah,
there could be excellence. And also, you have many, many people that have gifts that can help engage that.
That's,
and
true,
that can help run that this, true, that can help use their gifts in such a way.
The word I would use is better. I hope it's better. I really do. I hope it's better. I hope it produces not a replicating experience, but I hope it looks better. I hope, yeah, it sounds better.
Yeah.
Like I'm totally for that. Like, again, with all the other governors that we have, we're not going to do it at any cost financially, yeah, or at any cost in terms,
sure,
of resources, but better is always a good answer.
Yeah.
If we look at the financial expenditure, the human resource expenditure, the giftedness of our people around, and if we go, yeah, or if we see a specific need in which our teaching particularly can be used, yes. But I would say what we are committed to not doing, actually, is trying to create an experience for, in a sense, almost anybody. So let me tell you, I'm from a faraway place, right? So my family lives very, very, very far away. And I've got now family members that are physically incapable of even attending church.
Right.
And they love our church services and they use them. And I don't have any problem with that. Right. So it's like my sister who is confined to a wheelchair, who usually actually very many times tries to go to church, but if she doesn't, she'll watch. My parents are much more complicated for them. And I love that. And I think that's absolutely great. And if we can help that experience for them or for our people, even in Stillwater who are homebound, I have no problem with that. I think that's a wonderful means or a wonderful product that we can help them worship God with. And then I think about the people that we hear this a lot. People graduate from Oklahoma State University. They are part of our fellowship. They move to a place. They're having a hard time finding a church. And I've had people say this, but you know what? Here's the cool part is I don't have to really worry about it because I just follow you guys online. And so it's like they're not doing something. Now, again, I don't go, well, then we're going to shut it down and we're not going to let you. Like, that's an overreaction mm-hmm. to the issue.
Yeah.
And then so we have to continue our discipleship. We have to continue telling them when they're here, hey, by the way, want you to know that love what we do here. We're glad that you love it. But when you move to Nebraska, you need to find a church in Lincoln, right? And so that is a discipleship issue.
Yeah.
It's not a technology problem.
Yeah.
It's a discipleship issue. And so that's the scenario that I think we've got serious questions about developing online church and creating an online presence with the intention of, right?
Right.
But we're for a good product that blesses people and encourages them in different dynamics. We don't want to wash our hands and not care about how somebody might be misusing it, but we're also not going to like overly beat ourselves up.
Yep.
And how do we stop everybody from misusing it? No, that's actually, I think, an overreach as well,
right,
in terms of you trying to manage what other people are doing. No, we're going to continue to disciple. Just like a parent has to figure out how to let their kids use cell phones, we as leaders of our church have to help our people understand how to use different technologies.
Right. Well, I appreciate your thoughts. This is probably a conversation we'll return to at some point. As we close, I just want to make it clear that we are not claiming to have the solution. We believe that there is, with the guidance of the Holy Spirit leading elders and pastors, there's a healthy spectrum on this topic that I think churches can and should land. And we are sorting out where this particular church lands, and we'll trust the Spirit as He leads us, and we'll trust Him as He leads others, perhaps slightly differently. Thank you guys. Love you. We'll hear from you next time. You'll hear from us next time.